We just finished singing hymn number 251, didn't we? In verse 4 says, Jesus, my shepherd, brother, friend, my prophet, priest and king, my Lord, my life, my way, my end. Accept the praise I bring. Brilliant. Because that's exactly what someone does in our passage today, because they get it. They get how important Jesus is, and I hope that I'll be able to draw that out today. There's a lot in our passage, it says a lot, so I'm actually just going to get straight into it this morning. In our passage today, we see that Jesus' death is central to God's plan of salvation. I'll say that again. Jesus' death is central to God's plan of salvation. In the passage we can see that it has great significance as Jesus himself links it to the Passover. We see the understanding or the lack of understanding of the significance of Jesus' death from a variety of people. And we see God in complete control, as always, of his plans. So the context for today's passage is that Jesus has really caused Jerusalem to sit up and think. He's really caused a stir in Jerusalem. His teachings and reputation has spread, and as a result, he now has many supporters. We often think of just the 12 disciples. Actually, Jesus had a lot of supporters at this time. But he also has some powerful enemies because of that. He has, in the chapters just before chapter 26, just before our passage, been teaching people about the coming judgment. This terrifying reality that will happen. It's going to happen. This terrifying reality that the king will return and gather only his people to him. And the rest he will turn away. Just look at the verse just before our passage in chapter 25, verse 46. Then they will go away to eternal punishment. Michael talked about hell just recently, and it really stuck with me. He said after a billion years of punishment, it will be like a drop in the ocean. It will just continue. Terrifying. But the righteous, it says in verse 46, to eternal life. So he's just been teaching them about this judgment that's going to be coming. And then, in our passage, and in chapter 26, and the rest of it, what follows this promise of judgment is, well, the outworking of how God's people can escape that judgment. Fantastic. This is how people can be saved. And that's where our passage begins. Okay, so that's the context of our passage. That's where it begins. And it highlights that Jesus' death is central to God's plan of salvation. That is the core. Everything points to that. So please have a look at verses 1 and 2. This is where we see Jesus' death is central to God's plan of salvation. When Jesus had finished saying all these things, he said to his disciples, as you know, the Passover is 2 days away, and the Son of Man will be handed over to be crucified. So here we see that Jesus' death, this is where it makes it clear, is absolutely central to God's amazing plan of salvation for all people. Jesus himself makes the link between his death and the Passover. And to be able to understand that link, we need to understand what the Passover was. So, I'll explain. All the way back in Exodus, and many of you will probably know this, but all the way back in Exodus, a couple of thousand years before Jesus ever existed, we're talking, The Israelites, God's people, were slaves in Egypt. And God rescues them. He saves them. He brings them out of Egypt. And part of that salvation plan were the various plagues. You know about those plagues. And the worst of which being that every firstborn son in the whole of Egypt would die. God would sweep through the land and strike down every firstborn, whether that was human or animals, whether that firstborn had grown up and was old or young. It didn't matter. All were going to die. But there was one escape. There was one thing. There was one way to escape that. The Israelites were to sacrifice a special lamb, an unblemished lamb, a perfect lamb, a really, really good one that they were to choose. And they sacrifice this lamb and they paint the blood on the doorposts of their houses. And then there were various instructions on what to do with the meat, how to cook it, how to eat it, when it should be eaten, even how to stand as you eat it. There are all these instructions. But when God moved through the land, the blood on the doorposts would be a sign and God would pass over that house. And whoever was inside was saved. That's the name, Passover. God would pass over that house and no one inside would die. They were saved. The blood on the doorpost was a sign that a death had already happened there. And because of that, the people inside were safe. There was no other way of being saved. It's such an important thing to grasp. There was no other way of being saved. That was it. The Israelites of the time had to totally rely on that sacrificial death in their place to save them. You couldn't run away from it. I know what I'll do. I'll go to the house next door. That'll do. No, you can't escape it. You cannot run away from this. It's coming. It's a reality. It's terrifying, but it's real. You can't run away from it. You couldn't persuade God not to kill the firstborn. Or you couldn't impress him with anything that you could do. There was nothing you could do. You had to rely on that sacrificial death of that lamb to save you. That was the only thing that could save you. Couldn't you imagine how important then that lamb, that death in their place was? It's incredible. It's a huge deal. Someone had died, or something had died to save you. And so it was remembered each year. And as in all traditions, over time, the real meaning kind of gets forgotten. Or maybe not forgotten, but it becomes less personal, doesn't it? It becomes less personal. So when Jesus makes the link between his death and the death of the Passover lamb, most people didn't understand it. They didn't understand what he was saying. In verse 2, he was saying, I am going to be that Passover lamb. Through my death, you are going to be saved. Jesus' death is absolutely central to God's plan of salvation. It is of great significance. To be saved from the coming judgment that Jesus has just been teaching about previously, people needed to be completely reliant on his death, as they were reliant on the lamb's death back in the day of the Passover, back in the past. Everything about the Passover was actually pointing towards this event of Jesus' death. I hope you've got one of these tables. They were handed out at the start. There's maybe enough for sort of one between two. If you've got one of those, Have a look at it, please, because I'm hoping that this will help explain. In my preparation, I came across this, and I found it incredibly helpful. So if you're sharing with someone, just make sure you can both see it. This table shows us the correlation between the Passover in the Old Testament and Jesus' death in the New Testament. So let me explain. In the table, down the left-hand side, the far left-hand side column, you can see the days and the timings and the stages of the Passover. Okay? As it was in the Old Testament. These are the stages of the Passover. The different things. And you can see there, we've got dusk, just in that top one, dusk Friday, dusk Saturday. Jewish days began and ended at dusk. So we start the table with Saturday there, and Abib is the month. Okay, so it's the ninth there. So that's the days down the side, the timings, the stages of the Passover. Then you can see in the middle column, it shows you what should happen on the original Passover in the Old Testament thousands of years ago, according to the instructions that God had given. So you can see Passover lamb is selected on a certain day. It's kept until the day of sacrifice and so on. You can see those stages. And then notice in the right-hand side column, the New Testament events surrounding Jesus link exactly with the timings of the original Passover. They remembered it every year, okay, once it happened, and they would do the same things, go through the same rituals at the same times, same days, and look what we have. The Passover lamb is selected on that Sunday. That's when Jesus rides into Jerusalem and the people choose him as their king, don't they? They lay down palms, they say, yes, Jesus! The Passover lamb is selected. Then the lamb without blemish is kept until the day of sacrifice. Jesus then stays in Jerusalem. And while he's there, the religious leaders question him. And they question his authority, and he is found to be faultless. He is the spotless lamb. And then as we just go down, you have the preparation day, and that's where we are in our passage. Jesus is betrayed by Judas. He's taken prisoner and so on. And then we see, at the time where the faultless lambs were killed as that sacrifice, that's when Jesus is crucified. That's exactly the same timing as when Jesus dies. That doesn't happen by accident, does it? These things don't happen by accident. This is central to God's plan. It's an incredible thing. Amazing. So, Jesus dies as the Passover lamb, but his disciples, and certainly the religious leaders of the time, didn't understand the link that he was making. You know, the Passover is going to be in 2 days, and the Son of Man will be handed over to be crucified. They didn't get the link that he was saying. We have the benefit of hindsight. We can look at these things and see, wow, that is incredible. And we see that lack of understanding actually is a recurring theme in our passage with most of the groups of the people that are mentioned. So we can see it first with the chief priests and the elders in verses 3 to 5. Please have a look at verses 3 to 5. Then the chief priests and the elders of the people assembled in the palace of the high priest, whose name was Caiaphas, and they plotted to arrest Jesus in some sly way and kill him. But not during the feast, they said, or there may be a riot among the people. So they actually plan, the religious leaders, they actually plan for Jesus not to die during the Passover. They actually plan for him not to die during the Passover. Oh yeah, they still want to kill him. Don't get that wrong. They still want to kill him, but they just want to bump him off quietly. They want to kill him, not because they understand his central role as Passover lamb in God's plan of salvation, but because they've rejected him as Messiah, even though Jesus has given clear indications that that is exactly who he is. To them, he's now a big threat to their authority, and they want to kill him after the Passover because they're worried that his supporters would cause havoc. Remember, he had quite a lot of support. And during the festival of the Passover, the population in Jerusalem would rise to around 1 million people. So actually, if they did something that was, you know, a bit risky, it literally could cause havoc and a riot could happen. Killing Jesus, it's a big thing. So actually, yes, they wanted to kill him, but if it was just up to them, if it was just up to humans, and that Jesus' death wasn't actually part of God's plan, then Jesus would not have died at the Passover. Because it just wasn't worth the risk and hassle. If it was just up to people, Jesus wouldn't have died then. But God was in control, and Jesus' death was and is central to his plans. So it had to happen now. He is the ultimate Passover lamb. We'll come back to that later. We'll see how God's in control. Next, the next group of people in contrast, or the next person we see in contrast, is the one person in our passage that seems to have an inkling of what's about to happen. We see how Mary, it's Mary Magdalene, who was the sister of Lazarus, who was raised back to life by Jesus. We see how Mary understood Jesus' value and significance. She got it. She understood it. She got verse 4 of that song. Everything. He's everything. Have a look at verses 6 and 7, please. While Jesus was in Bethany, in the home of a man known as Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume, which she poured on his head as he was reclining at the table. So while Jesus was at a house of a man called Simon the leper, it's not a nickname to be jealous of, is it? That name, Simon, was quite a common name, and leprosy covered a wide range of skin conditions. So Simon the leper may have been someone that Jesus healed previously from a skin condition. They're at his house. Mary brings out some very expensive perfume or ointment. It was probably something called nard, or spikenard it's called, and it's imported from India. And it was usually kept in these long-necked bottles. And to get at it, you actually had to snap the neck of the bottle. There were no screw caps back then. You had to snap the neck of the bottle. And once it was opened, that's it. It's open. You've got to use the lot. And that's exactly what she did. She poured the perfume over his head, and she did it gladly. Oh, she did it gladly. Absolutely. Why? Why? Why did she do that? Jesus says later, she's done a beautiful thing. She's prepared me for my burial. What was going on? Why did she do that? Well, she may well have heard whisperings of the plot to kill Jesus. This plot that was going on, she may have heard whisperings, rumours about it. And she possibly also heard rumours of the plot to also kill her brother, Lazarus. We see details of that in John 12, verses 9 to 11. So it's quite possible that she understood that Jesus was going to die. And she pours out the perfume in an act of love that shows she was completely devoted to him. Even this very expensive perfume, which may have been a family heirloom that gets passed down, well, she wouldn't withhold that. Even that. And on the other hand, the disciples show their complete lack of understanding of what is unfolding. They show that even after all the time they've spent with him, with Jesus, listening to all his teaching, that they don't see the centrality and the significance of Jesus' death. Because they call what she did a waste. It's a waste. Have a look at verses 8 to 13, please. When the disciples saw this, they were indignant. Why this waste? They asked. This perfume could have been sold at a high price and the money given to the poor. Aware of this, Jesus said to them, "Why are you bothering this woman? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, but you will not always have me. When she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. I tell you the truth, wherever this gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her." The disciples don't understand Jesus' value and significance. When they see the amazing thing that Mary does, their instant reaction is to grumble. What on earth does she think she's doing? All that given away. For what? More important to them than Jesus are the poor people around them in Jerusalem. Seems a reasonable thing to say, though, doesn't it? That actually sounds like a fair enough thing to say. Use the money to help people out. That's a good thing. Surely that's a good thing. But what they've done is lost sight of the most important thing. Jesus, God's Son, dying as the ultimate Passover lamb to save them and bring them to God. The unblemished, perfect lamb giving his life instead of theirs. Nothing in the world is more important than that. Nothing. If they'd truly understood, they would have seen that even Mary's act of devotion didn't in any way encapsulate all that Jesus is worth. They just see him as normal, and he's not worth the expense. Not worth it. Jesus responds by telling them that Mary's right. She is right. The poor you will always have around you, he says to the disciples. But I won't be. I'm going to die for you. The disciples needed to understand Jesus' death, how important it is for them, and they needed to receive it with gratitude and devotion like Mary. It is the most important thing. Not even charity work with the poor is as important. Good as that work is, Jesus isn't saying that giving to the poor and things like charity work is useless. Far from it. No, Jesus is saying that charitable work, great as it is no substitute for Jesus and his death, and giving that the number one priority in our lives. That is the most important thing. The centre of God's salvation plan for us isn't charity work. No, it's the death of Jesus, the Passover lamb, to save us and to bring us to God. Then from that flows everything else. From that understanding flows everything else, like charity work, like meeting people's needs. And doing whatever, you know, whatever that is, in the hope that as we do that and preach the gospel, that they in turn would come to God too. So the question to ask ourselves here is the driving force in any good work that we do individually or that we do as a church, is it there just to simply make people around us in the world more comfortable, or perhaps make friends with the people around us? Or is the driving force the gospel? Because that's what it should be. Then moving on to our final verses. In verses 14 to 16, we see how God is in complete control. Remember that we left the chief priests earlier planning that Jesus would not die during Passover. And we see now how central Jesus being God's Passover lamb is to his plans, because he uses Judas's own choices to begin to bring this plan to fruition. So have a look at verses 14 to 16, please. "Then one of the 12, the one called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and asked, 'What are you willing to give me if I hand him over to you?' So they counted out for him 30 silver coins. From then on, Judas watched for an opportunity to hand him over." So we see God's control here. Jesus will be the Passover lamb. Judas did not understand the importance of Jesus' death. A lot of scholars believe that he expected Jesus to be different to how he actually turned out. He expected him to be more of a military leader. And certainly he was no longer willing to support this Jesus who seemed to have given up. You know, he was constantly talking about dying. That's not the sort of Messiah I want to follow. So he decides to betray Jesus, and he asks the chief priests what they would give him to hand him over. The chief priests just cannot pass up this opportunity. They're like, whoa, this is, what? Yeah, okay, we'll go with this. And they go back on their original plan of not, you know, killing him during the Passover, and they agree to give Judas the sum of 30 silver coins, which Judas accepts. And that figure really shows that the chief priests and Judas just treated Jesus with disdain. He was nothing to them, because the price of 30 silver coins was the cost of a slave. It's in massive contrast, isn't it, to Mary's view of Jesus as absolutely priceless. She was right. She got it. Judas did not understand the value and significance of Jesus and his death. And this passage then leaves us with some important questions to ask ourselves today. Jesus' death is central to God's plan of salvation. He was the Passover lamb. But what is Jesus' death worth to you? Do you see the significance of his death personally in your life? Or has it all been lost in tradition and religion? I've been a Christian for years and years and years, and we're used to hearing it so often, and we lose just how personal it is. He died for you. That's incredible. Just think, back in the days of Exodus, would someone have sold that little lamb, that animal, for 30 silver coins? That animal that they were going to sacrifice, would they have sold it for 30 silver coins? No way. Just wouldn't have happened, would it? If someone had come and brought them a huge, great gold bar, can I buy that lamb? You know, will you sell it? No! That lamb is going to save my life. No way. It's worth way more to me than that. I'm not getting rid of it. I'm not giving it away. What value do you put on that? What value do you put on something saving your life? You can't. So what about Jesus' death for you? What is it worth? And it may be today that we don't have this cost of 30 silver coins. You know, someone sort of says, 30 silver coins for your faith in Jesus, please. You know, we're not going to get that sort of situation. But the equivalent today could be a career, where Jesus is left behind so that you can progress in your job. Leave Jesus behind for professional advancement. For some others of us here today, Jesus' death for you may not be worth as much as a relationship that you know you shouldn't have. Or it may be we see in people around us, possibly, that Jesus isn't worth their chosen sexual lifestyle, your chosen sexual lifestyle. Jesus isn't worth it. We leave him behind. But be careful, because some of these things that are really obvious, you know, are, okay, I won't exchange Jesus for those sorts of things. It can be much more subtle than that. There can be things which are much more subtle, like we saw in the passage with the disciples helping the poor. You know, why that waste? That money could be given to the poor. They didn't get how valuable Jesus was. What about things like this? How highly do you value the genuinely good things in life? Like giving to the poor, charity work, these sorts of things. spending time with your family, with your children, with your grandchildren. Education, maybe even education for you. If you've finished, work or something like that. Some people do degrees and they or travel, holidays or whatever. Millions of other genuinely good activities that we can pursue. They're good things. What are they worth? Those things aren't wrong in themselves, but if they take the place of Jesus' death in our lives as absolutely number one, then they are wrong. They are absolutely wrong. Let's pray. Father God, we thank you for the amazing death of your Son, Jesus Christ, as our Passover Lamb. We thank you that his death is central to your plan of salvation. Help us to keep Jesus' death central to our lives so that nothing would take priority over it. May everything we do flow from an understanding of the value and significance of this event to us personally. Amen.